Hi, I'm Maureen O'Hagan with MCO Housing Services. We were hired by the developer of Lewis Farm Village to handle the distribution of the 5 affordable 2-bedroom units. So tonight, that's what we're going to talk about. We're going to review a little bit about the project, the eligibility criteria, and then spend most of the time talking about the documents you need to provide to have an opportunity to purchase a unit. This meeting is being recorded. If you have a question that you do not want recorded, let me know before you ask it, and I will shut the recording off and then turn it back on. I have opened the chat, so if you want to type questions, I will answer those as we go along. So to get started, so this is a 55-plus development, which means one homeowner must be 55 years of age or older. Each of the two bedrooms includes two full baths in approximately 1566 square feet of living space. Air conditioning is included, along with a two-car garage and unfinished basement. All kitchen appliances are provided, along with washer and dryer hookups. Pets are allowed, but there are breed restrictions, and that's for insurance purposes for the property. And you will have town water and sewer. The price for each unit is $217,600. The current 2025 Dracut residential tax rate is $10.12 per thousand. You will pay taxes on the affordable price, not the appraised value of the home. And the current initial monthly condo fee is $144 a month. That is not fixed. It will increase on an annual basis, usually around January 1st. So my guess is you would be notified in November or December what your next year's condo fee will be. Okay, just lock. So it's not fixed. So please don't call me in a year and say my condo fee went up, because it will probably go up. Mine has gone up a lot with the cost of services these days. Everyone's costs have gone up. So, okay. So in order to be included in the lottery, you need to submit a mortgage pre-approval, although you certainly can pay cash, because the asset limit is $275,000. With a price of $217,600, you certainly can pay cash for the unit. Understanding, we determine your asset value before any down payments or if you pay cash for the unit. So you need to provide a mortgage pre-approval if you are not paying cash. And you need to provide all the required financial documentation. If you submit an incomplete application, you will not be included in the lottery. You will receive an email from us letting you know what documents are missing. You certainly can provide the missing documentation, and we will add you to a waiting list, but you will not be included in the lottery. Those who submitted a complete application and was reviewed, determined ineligible based on income or assets, you will have the opportunity to appeal that decision. If you were determined eligible, you will be included in the lottery. You will receive a lottery code, which is what we announce in the lottery. Okay. So tonight is the public information meeting. Ask any question you want. That's what we're here for. The lottery is scheduled for April 28th. The application deadline is April 28th, and the lottery is scheduled for May 23rd. If we can, we will move the lottery up, but that is determined based on the number of applications we receive, because every application we receive is reviewed prior to the lottery, and eligibility is determined. There are two main eligibility criteria. One is based on income. And income is based on the number of people who will be living in the household, okay? So it's not just you if the mortgage is going to be in your name. It's everyone who's living in the household. And these numbers that I give you are the 2024 income limits. Once the 2025 income limits are released, we will use those. So for a one-person household, the maximum allowable income is $68,500. For a two-person household, $78,250. For a three-person household, $88,050. And for a four-person household, $97,800. That is the maximum you can earn from all sources of income. When we determine your income, forward 12 months. Can you, Paul, mute?
Hello?
Yes. Do you have a question?
No, I don't.
Could you mute, please? I muted you. You're all set. So those are the income limits. You need to provide income for all household members 18 years of age or older. They are all considered an adult. So their income and assets will be used in determining your program eligibility, okay? I will talk about later if you're the 18-year-old is a student, we may not count the full amount, and I will get into that later. Again, at least one household member must be 55 years of age or older. And then finally, I've already mentioned it, the asset limit is $275,000. Now that is the total maximum amount if you have a home to sell. The equity from the home sale and your other assets cannot exceed $275,000. If you do not have a home to sell, the asset limit is still $275,000. Now, in determining your assets, we're going to look at your current value checking, savings, stocks, bonds, money market, CDs, all that kind of stuff. But when we look at your retirement accounts, for example, you have a 401k. If you are retired and you are receiving a monthly contribution from that 401k to supplement your income, we can only count that account once. We can either count it as income or we can count it as an asset. We can't count it as both. So if you are taking a regular distribution from your 401k or pension or retirement, whatever your account may be, if you're taking a regular distribution to supplement your income, then we're going to count that as income, and the balance of that account will not count towards your asset limit. Now, I will say, this already has to be set up. It's too late to set this up now. But if that's how you have it set up, and that applies for an IRA, if you're getting money from an IRA, be it a traditional or Roth IRA, you're taking a monthly regular distribution, not just your required minimum annually, but a regular distribution from that account. Again, we can't count it twice. We count it as income or asset. And if you are taking a regular withdrawal, it will be counted as income. So the balance of the account will not count as the asset. All right? Does that make sense? Now, if you have a 401k and you're not accessing it yet, depending on your age, if you're still working, or you have one you're not accessing yet and you're not working, it's going to count towards your asset limits. If you're retired or not working, or it's an old 401k, we are going to deduct federal tax, state tax, and if you're underage, a early withdrawal penalty. That's usually around 37%, is going to be deducted from the value of your account, and then the balance is going to count towards your asset limit. Okay, so we may not count the full value of your account. If you are still working and you have a 401k, depending on your age, you may be able to start withdrawing from it. It will count at that point in time towards your asset limit. Again, we will deduct taxes and penalties if appropriate. A Roth IRA, if you're not withdrawing, that's going to count at face value. Traditional IRA, if you are not withdrawing, we will deduct taxes, federal and state, deduct that from the value of your IRA, and whatever whatever is remaining will count towards your asset limits. I think that covers everything regarding the assets. If I've missed something, send me the question and I'll be more than happy to answer it. Assets divested at less than full market value within the past 2 years will be counted at market value in determining your asset limits. Okay. So if you currently own a home, that home must be sold before you can close on a deed restricted property. It does not have to be sold before you apply for the unit. I would not recommend you put your home on the market if all your eggs are going for one of the five units in Drake. Because if you don't get a unit, your house is on the market, it probably will sell quickly, and then you have no place to go. So typically what happens, you know, you will have usually a 30-day time frame from the time you have a home, after the lottery, if you have the opportunity to purchase. You have a 30-day time frame. Your home must be under a purchase and sale agreement. If it is not under agreement, then we're going to move on to the next buyer, okay? So if you have a home to sell, and now these units are not going to all be available at the same time, but if you have a unit to sell, what I would do is take your time now and start prepping it for sale. Whatever you need to do, repairs, packing up some stuff, whatever your realtor suggests you do for your house to be in showable condition, that you can start doing now. But do not list it on the market unless you have another place to go if you don't have an opportunity to purchase at Lewis Farms, okay? I do not want you homeless, so please hold off on selling, but certainly prep your home. Because some people, you know, they've had the opportunity to purchase and they call me and say, well, I can't get my home on the market for 3 weeks. And I'm like, well, you have a week to get it under a purchase and sale agreement. So use the time wisely if you prep your home for sale. So when you have the opportunity to purchase, you know, there won't be that much of a delay to get it on the market. But that's up to you. I'm just telling you what I think. I have some questions. Does the person who is 55 need to be the homeowner, or is it okay to be a household member? It's okay to be a household member, but what you need to understand, if you are no longer with us, that home, depending on the age of the people you're buying, they have to be 55 or older, or they will need to sell the unit, and they will have lost their first-time home buyer status. So if they thought they would sell the unit and buy another affordable home, that's not going to happen. So you need to keep that in mind if you're going to live with a household. The buyers are under 55. If you're no longer there, the home has to be sold. And if they're not 55, they've lost their first-time home buyer status, and they will not be able to purchase another affordable unit until they sell it and wait 3 years, and then they would be considered a first-time home buyer again. Is there a cap on what they can raise the HOA fee to? No. So basically, if they decide it's a 5% increase, it's a 5% increase. If it's a big increase, it's going to 10%, it's a 10% increase. It's whatever the budget says. The market rate units are paying more. You'll never pay what the market people pay, but your percentage of the increase will stay the same. So if it's 10%, it's 10% across the board, okay? The market people will pay 10% increase, you will pay a 10% increase. And there's no way to know what the fee will be, and there is not a cap. So if I made $68K and have a 401K at $40K, that puts me over the limit, huh? No, it doesn't. If your 401K is valued at $40,000, that $40,000 may count towards the asset limit. It does not count towards your income. Your income, if you make $68,000, that's your income, $68,000. So there's an income limit and there's an asset limit. Your 401k is considered an asset. What do you think the move-in timeline looks like? For example, what could be the latest they would be looking at finances? I work in a school system and income looks funny before summer vacation. Okay. School systems are a little different. The unit availability, June, July, September, October, and November. Those are the current dates that I was given prior to the lottery when the affordable units would be available. Now, this is new construction. There can be delays. I will speak with the developer before the lottery to see if there's any changes in the availability dates, but that's what we're working off of right now. As far as the school system, income looks funny before summer vacation. I'm not sure I understand that. But if you're working for a school system, if you're a teacher or whatever you do when you're on salary, we need to know how many pay stubs in the year you get. Do you stretch your income out over 12 months, or do you get paid for over 44 weeks and then you don't get paid over the summer? So we need to know that in determining your income. Are you going to work during the summer at another job? We need to know that. So working in a school system, that's kind of funky for us to figure out too, when you say your income looks funny before summer vacation. So you would, if you apply, you would need to explain that. So attach a letter to it. If we don't quite understand it as we're reviewing your application, we will call you and ask some questions. But trying to figure out your income as long as we have everything and we need to investigate further is not going to disqualify you from participating in the lottery, assuming everything else is there and you're determined eligible. Okay. So these are affordable units. They must be owner-occupied. They cannot be rented or leased without prior permission from the monitoring agent. And I'm telling you right now, it's very difficult to get permission to rent or lease your unit. Non-household members are not permitted to be co-signers on the mortgage. So only people living in the home can be co-signers on the mortgage. Again, a mortgage pre-approval is required, although you can pay cash because the price is below the $275,000 asset limit. Now, I'm going to spend some time over the specific mortgage guidelines. It must be a fixed-rate mortgage, usually 30-year fixed-rate mortgage. The minimum down payment is 3%. If you are using a down payment assistance program or you are receiving a gift from family members, the down payment out of your pocket would be reduced to 1.5%, all right? But when we review your application for eligibility, we will look at your mortgage pre-approval and it will tell us what your financing amount will be or what your down payment will be. And between wherever your down payment's coming from, we expect to see those funds in your account at the time you apply. If they're not there, we're not putting you in the lottery. Now, some people will say, well, I'm waiting for my tax refund. Well, we don't know what unit you're getting. We don't know when your tax refund's going to get here. We are not holding a unit for you while you wait for your tax refund, okay? It must be made by an institutional lender. There's no private mortgages. You need to go to a bank or a mortgage company and get a mortgage. Again, fixed rate, 30-year, no more than 2 points on the closing. Most affordable units don't pay points at all, but if you are going to pay points, it's no more than 2 points. Your monthly housing cost cannot exceed 38% of your monthly income for the mortgage. Again, non-household members are not permitted to be co-signers on the loan. And FHA, Quicken Loans, Rocket Mortgage, you cannot use. They will not close on deed-restricted properties. There are other lenders that state they are. They don't work on deed-restricted properties. They're not included in there because sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. So if you submit any one of those loans, you will automatically not be included in the lottery. If you submit a loan from another lender, we'll let you know. We'll accept it, but you would need to get a new pre-approval before you were offered a unit. All right, so I have added additional mortgage specifics because people were sending in incomplete mortgage pre-approval letters. So I have expanded that by 11 points, and I'll go over those 11 points now. They're pretty basic. Your pre-approval must cover the purchase price. So the purchase price is $217,600. The purchase price at minimum in your pre-approval letter must be $217,600. $200,000 isn't gonna work. The minimum purchase price is $217,600. Again, you can pay cash. Your mortgage pre-approval must be a fixed rate mortgage. If you submit a pre-approval with an adjustable rate mortgage, you will not be included in the lottery. Period. At minimum, your pre-approval needs to show the purchase price and the financing amount or the down payment amount. If it does not, you will not be included in the lottery. And that's where, when we review your pre-approval, if we're reviewing your application for eligibility, we look at your pre-approval and you've got the purchase price and the financing amount. We subtract the financing amount from the purchase price. That is your down payment. And that is the dollar amount we expect to see in your accounts when we review your assets. Okay? So if you're supposed to put down a $50,000 down payment and you have $40,000 in assets, you're not going to be in the lottery. So we expect to see the down payment amount at the time in your accounts at the time you purchase, with one exception that I'll get to in a moment. If your pre-approval does not have an expiration date after 60 days from date of issue, it will be considered expired. If your pre-approval expires after your application submission, we will accept it, but you would have to, and if you have the opportunity to purchase, you would need to provide an updated pre-approval prior to final eligibility determination. If it expired prior to your application submission, you will not be included in the lottery. If you plan on using a down payment assistance program, Mass Housing has a program that right now it's $25,000 to $30,000 they'll give you. I'm not saying give you. I'm not a mortgage lender. I know those funds are available. How it works, you would need to do your own research on that. If you intend to use, for example, the Mass Housing Down Payment Assistance Program, that needs to be stated in your pre-approval, okay? So you're going to have a purchase price of $217,600. You may have a $30,000 down payment. So $217,600 minus $180,000 or so. The pre-approval must state that you are using the Mass Housing Down Payment Assistance Program, or whatever down payment assistance program it may be. It must be stated in the pre-approval. If it is not, it will not be taken under consideration. People have said, we denied them. They said, well, I'm using the down payment assistance program. I'm like, we have no mention of that anywhere in any of the documentation you provided us. And for that reason, we will not take it under consideration. It's got to be stated in the pre-approval. Again, we will determine your down payment based on your pre-approval. I've already covered that. Some of your down payment is coming from a gift from a family member, that family member needs to provide a letter with your application stating the amount the gift will be. If they give a range, $10,000 to $25,000, we're always going to count the higher amount. And if it puts you over the asset limit, so be it. But we do not expect to see that gift money they're giving you in your account. We understand it's a gift to purchase, so a lot of times people don't provide the money until you have the opportunity to purchase, and that is fine. We do not expect to see that money in your account. It very well may be there, but it doesn't have to be. Again, if you're using a down payment assistance program or getting a gift for a down payment, then the money of your own funds is reduced to 1.5%. Okay, you have to have money in the game, which is why you must have a minimum 1.5%. If you are not using a down payment assistance program, if you are not getting a gift of anything, then your down payment minimum is 3%, okay? And we check for that, or the 3% or whatever your down payment will be. Again, we check for that in your bank statement when we determine your assets. You can put more than 3% down, but not less. You can put more than 1.5% down, but not less. And remember, you're responsible for down payment and closing costs. I don't know what the closing costs will be. Your lender will provide you a good faith estimate once you submit a mortgage application, which only happens if you have the opportunity to purchase. All right? I would say, guesswork on my end, closing costs will be $5,000 to $7,000 in addition to your down payment. All right. So you are responsible for both. Again, the gift letter must be for a specific amount. Okay. We will accept VA loans. It says here we won't. We will accept VA loans. But FHA, Rocket Mortgage, Quicken, we definitely will not. Okay. Online mortgage pre-approvals will not be accepted. And I understand. The reason for it is, if you're just doing it online, your credit's not being checked, your income's not being checked, you can write whatever you make as income, you can put whatever you want for a down payment, with no documentation to back up the numbers. So for that reason, we do not accept online online mortgage pre-approval for that reason. We recommend you speak or meet with a mortgage lender, and they should be checking your credit, pay history to determine your ability to secure a mortgage. Now, okay, we will accept no pre-approvals where any information has been crossed out, whited out, and submitted with the application. So if you realize you're getting mass housing, it's not on the letter, and you write mass housing, we're not going to accept it. It needs to come from the lender. So you writing mass housing doesn't mean you're eligible for the mass housing loan, and it doesn't mean you've even talked to a lender about it. So if you write it on the letter, we're not going to approve it. You won't be included in the lottery. So no cross-outs, whited out, nothing. It needs to be the current letter you receive from your mortgage company without any changes. People try to submit late, you know, old pre-approvals and just cross out or white out the date and handwrite in a new date. We won't accept it, okay? Any questions on pre-approval, okay? Again, there is the One Mortgage Program out there that is geared for first-time home buyers, and the Mass Housing Program is geared for first-time home buyers. You can use any lender you want. We have 4 lenders listed on our website if you have questions about where you should go. So we have 4 lenders on our website. You're welcome to use them. You do not have to. The One Mortgage Program is available through approved lenders only. You can, any of the lenders on our website are approved lenders, or you can go to MHP.net and you can look up the full list of approved lenders. And MHP stands for the Massachusetts Housing Partnership. They're the ones who sponsor the One Mortgage Program. So you can look up all the approved lenders on their website. Mass Housing, most lenders, not all, lend on the Mass Housing. So that's an easier to find a lender that will lend. Both programs, the benefits are the minimum requirement is 3%. I'm not going into the 1.5. I've been over that ad nauseum. The minimum credit score, I believe, is 660. You don't pay PMI because if you put less than 20% down. For the One Mortgage Program, you tend to pay a lower condo fee. A lower interest rate. And with the Mass Housing, you tend to pay a slightly higher interest rate. Now, there is a program available through MHP. It's called the One Plus Program. And that is where if you currently live in specific cities and towns in Massachusetts, and you'd have to go online to look at the specific cities and towns. Then they have funds to assist you to purchase, and you can purchase in any town you want. So that's a good program to look at because the One Mortgage Program or through MHP tends to have a lower interest rate. So you will need to do your research, determine what program works better for you. You've all experienced people, so you don't want every lender to pull your credit because if you have all lenders pull credit, it can bring your credit score down. So you need to protect that. So you don't want everyone, if you're shopping around for a loan, which I absolutely recommend, do not let them all pull your credit because it can bring your credit down quickly below the minimum credit score. And if it gets down there, it takes a whole lot longer to get it back up. So protect that credit. All right. 3 of the 5 units are available to, for local preference. And to meet the local preference criteria, you are either a current Dracut resident, you're employed by the town of Dracut or the Dracut School Department, or you are a veteran and a Dracut resident. Okay, so any one of those, you only need to meet one, any one of those puts you in the local preference pool. So 3 units are designated for local preference. 2 units are for the open pool. Everyone included in the local pool automatically is also included in the open pool. So local pool applicants have 2 chances for a unit, okay? Now, hang on a second, I got to find it because I don't know the percentage. 33.4% of the local pool applicants need to be minority. If we haven't met that number by everybody in the local pool, then we will pull by lottery non-local minority applicants, and we will pull as many as we need to from the open pool, moved by lottery, into the local pool until we meet that 33.4%. Most of the time, we meet that number. But if we don't, that's how we will meet the 33.4% minority applicants in the local pool. We will do a lottery on May, what did I say the lottery was? May 23rd. And we will do a lottery on May 23rd. That will be the first lottery we do to move the non-local minority applicants from the open pool into the local pool. And then they have the same two opportunities for a unit by being included in both pools. Once that has settled, if we need to do it, then we will actually pull the lottery for the units. It will be the local pool and then the open pool. Okay, there are household size preferences for all the units. All the units are two bedrooms. So everyone who applies that requires two bedrooms will have priority over those that are a one-person household. And household sizes based on husband and wife or those in a similar living arrangement must share a bedroom, and there's at least one person per bedroom thereafter. If you are pregnant, that unborn child will count as a household member. If a husband and wife or those in a similar living arrangement for whatever reason are not able to share a bedroom, that would be considered a special accommodation, and a letter from the doctor needs to be provided with your application before a second bedroom would be taken under consideration for you. If you are in the process of a divorce or separation, you need to be far enough along in the process that we know the distribution of household assets, meaning are you getting child support? Are you getting alimony? Is there a home to sell? What's the process of the proceeds? You're getting 50-50, 80-20. So we need, the process needs to be as far along so we can determine those numbers. If it is not, then your soon-to-be ex-spouse or partner needs to provide all the same required financial documentation as you do, even if, and it will be taken under for eligibility, even if they will not be living in the unit, okay? The reason for that is, shocker, I know, people have lied. So the whole process has been tightened up for people going through a divorce or separation, all right? Any questions on household size preference? Okay. This is a deed-restricted unit. You will sign a deed rider at the time you close. The deed rider includes document information on what to do when you're ready to sell it, if it goes into foreclosure, all the information you need. What it also includes is a resale price multiplier. A resale price multiplier is used to determine the resale value of the home. For example, the minimum income right now for the Lowell Lawrence area, which is the Draycott income limit that we use, is $132,900. So we take the purchase price and we divide it by the median income, and the estimated resale price multiplier is 1.63. So when you go to sell that unit, you take the median income at the time you sell, and it is adjusted on an annual basis. We're anxiously awaiting HUD right now to release the 2025 income limit. So you would take that 1.63, multiply it by the median income at the time you sell, and that is your resale price, period. Capital improvements may be taken under consideration. Capital improvements basically is everything that needs to be in working order in order for the home to be sold. So your appliances, heating system, electronics, plumbing, if you need a new roof, I mean, you're in an association. So if you have to do any capital improvements, they may, in parentheses and quotes, may be able to be taken under consideration at the time you sell. Obviously, the dollar amount will be prorated. You're not going to get dollar for dollar back. But you need to pay attention to the monitoring agent's process in order for the capital improvements to be taken into consideration. I don't know the exact process because it's not part of my job requirements, But I will tell you one thing is you need to get the approval for that capital improvement before the work is done. And then you need to provide the monitoring agent with a copy of the final paid invoice. They will take that invoice, put it in your file, and if they are able to add capital improvements to your resale price, they will. And when I say if they are able to, what that means is you're buying a home affordable based on your income and assets. It needs to be affordable for the next buyer as well. So if it means adding your capital improvements to the price, and then the price is no longer eligible for the next affordable buyer, then it will not be taken into consideration, the capital improvements. But at the end of the day, you need to get those approved by the monitoring agent before that work is done, okay? Now, this is your home. You can do whatever you want to it. It's your home, meaning if you want to put hardwood throughout and pull up the carpet, you can do that. If you want to finish the basement, you can do that. Understanding that is for your enjoyment, that neither one of those things are considered a capital improvement. So you need to understand if you do that, you will see no return on your investment when you sell. But it's your home. If you plan to live there for the rest of your life, you certainly want it to be comfortable. But you need to understand it is not going to increase the value of your home when you sell it, and it will not be taken into consideration in determining the resale price. Only capital improvements will be approved capital improvements will be taken into consideration. All right, any questions up to this point or any more questions? Nope, okay. So the lottery. So we're going to review everyone's application prior to the lottery. Again, if you submitted an incomplete application, you will receive an email or letter after we review your application letting you know what documentation was missing. You certainly can provide that missing documentation, but you will not be included in the lottery. You will be added to a waiting list should units remain after the lottery, okay? If you submitted a complete application and we reviewed it for eligibility and you're determined eligible, you will receive a lottery code, which is three letters, usually taken from your name. The lottery code is what will be announced during the lottery to protect your privacy. So for me, you know, MOH, you know, that's what I call out. No one's going to know it's Maureen O'Hagan. We don't share your name or information with anybody other than your financial information is shared with the monitoring agent. They have final approval on your eligibility. So if you're included in the lottery, that means I think you're eligible. Usually if I think you're eligible, you're eligible. But it's not official until the monitoring agent signs off on it, okay? And that will happen after the lottery and if you have an opportunity to purchase. If you submitted a complete application and we reviewed your application, you were determined ineligible based on income or assets, then you will have the you'll be notified and you will have the opportunity to appeal that decision. You'll have a deadline to appeal, depending on how quickly we can review your application. That appeal deadline will be usually of a week to provide additional new documentation. And then we'll look at your application again to see if you are eligible. Sometimes you are, sometimes you aren't. But anyone who's complete application, determined ineligible, will have the opportunity to appeal. All right, so there are five units. Three will be in the local pool. Two will be in the open pool. The homes will be distributed based on household size and lottery ranking. So say we have 10 people in the local pool. We're going to pull the local pool 1 through 10. The first three people are single-person households. We're going to move to the fourth person on the list and offer them the unit first, all right? So post-lottery, you will receive the lottery list is drawn, and also attached to that email will be, I'll break out after the lottery, the list of the order to purchase. So, you know, two-bedroom people have priority over one-person households. So, say that we have four two-bedroom households in the local pool, and we have 10 units, and they are four, seven, 9 and 10. 4, 7, 9, and 10 go to the top of the list. So the person in fourth place now has the first opportunity to purchase. And then we move the one-bedroom households to the bottom of the list. So what happens then, if we exhaust all the two-bedroom units, and that includes exhausted from the local pool and the open pool, if both those two-bedroom lists are exhausted and we still have units from the local pool remaining, then we will offer those units to single-person households in the local pool, all right? Same applies for the open pool. All two-bedroom applicants will have the initial opportunity to purchase based on their lottery ranking in the open pool, which will be different from the local pool because we'll pull the open pool separately. All two-bedroom households go to the top of the list by their lottery ranking. The one-bedroom households go to the bottom. There's five units here, and I don't want to put anybody off because a lot of times in 55-plus developments, I do wind up selling units to single or one-bedroom households, okay? So don't let that discourage you from applying because I would recommend everybody apply, even if you're a single-person household. Again, these units are going to be available from June to the end of the year. Some people may drop out. There tends to be movement on a lottery list, and we keep using that list until it's exhausted, okay? So hang in there because you still, if you're not an initial buyer, you may become a buyer later on down the road. Post-lottery, we will submit your documentation to the monitoring agent. They will give final approval. Once that is received, then you can select your unit. You'll see the unit. You'll go to purchase and sale agreement. You will need to provide us with your closing attorney, if you're using an attorney, and we will share that information with the seller's attorney in preparation of the purchase and sale agreement. We've got a couple questions. FHA pre-approvals will not be accepted, period. So I absolutely would recommend you get a new pre-approval. Question about down payment. If you are planning to sell your current home and use this toward the down payment, do you still need the amount in bank at time of application? No. If you have a home to sell, you need to provide us with a market analysis. The market analysis is going to tell us what your broker thinks the home will sell for, all right? So we're going to get that. You're going to provide us with a copy of your last mortgage statement or home equity loan, whatever you may have that you pay monthly. We're going to deduct the outstanding balance of the home. We're going to deduct that from the projected sale price. Whatever the balance is going to go towards your equity. So obviously that money is not going to be in the bank. If you're using your down payment from your home sale, that's okay. Once you sell your home, you need to provide us with a copy of the closing statement because that's going to give us what the final dollar amount is that you got from that sale of that home. And you still need to be eligible, all right? So if you applied now, your home, you're buying a home in September, October, November, December, whatever it may be, we're not going to get your final approval on your home now because by the time you close, it would be outdated. So 2 months or so before you close, for those that are purchasing a later unit in, say, September, we will then sit on your, we'll sign a unit for you, don't get me wrong, and we'll hold a unit for you. But we will come back at you for updated documentation. Then we will send your information off for pre-approval. If you have a home to sell, we need a copy of your closing statement. We need to share that with the monitoring agent because those of you who have a home to sell, you are going to receive a conditional approval only, contingent on the sale of the home, the equity you obtained from the sale of your home, plus all your other assets, still needs to be the max is still 275. So if your home sells for $50,000 over market, and that $50,000 puts you over the asset limit, you may lose the home to sell, okay? So you will only get those with a home to sell a conditional approval. It will not be final. And we'll hold off getting the final approval for the September, October, and November closings. Because if we do it now, it's outdated, and you're just going to have to update your stuff later. But again, you need to be eligible now, and you need to be eligible at the time you close. Once you close on the home, no one is going to be knocking on your door again, all right? So you don't, unlike rentals, you need to go through eligibility on an annual basis. The best way I can tell it, you can close on the home on August 1st and win the lottery for $50 million on August 2nd, and that home is yours. You're not going to lose the home. You were eligible when you bought it, so the home is yours, even though you're now $50 million richer the day after. Okay? All right. Again, I will verify with the developer at the time prior to the lottery to find out if they're still on target for the closing date. Usually they're not. Usually it's changed, but we won't know. I'm not going to do it now because anything can happen between now and then. You can, if you don't like the homes, you can turn them down. You don't have to buy it. If you turn it down, it does not impact your ability to apply and purchase somewhere else. It's just this home wasn't for you. So don't worry about that. All right, when you're ready to sell, you need to notify the monitoring agent. They will price the unit and tell you the next steps in the sales process, okay? I have another question. Can you make a larger down payment if the home sale puts you over the asset limit? No, if the home sale puts you over the asset limit, you are not eligible to participate in the lottery at all. And we will determine your asset, the 275 asset limit, before any money, before your down payment or closing costs is deducted or will be spent. So when your asset limit is determined, it's your full assets before any down payments. Okay, any questions? All right, moving along. So the information, I don't know if you're following along with the application, I'm on page 8. The information on top is an affordability analysis. It's just an example. It is not written in stone, meaning, for example, if you use the down payment assistance program or the one mortgage program, you don't pay PMI. In this example, we have $134 a month is your payment for private mortgage insurance. You do not have to pay that with the one mortgage or mass housing program, or if you put more than 20% down. Estimated real estate taxes are $184 a month. That could be right or wrong. This is priced on a 7.12 interest rate. Interest rates are down a little bit in the high sixes, so the interest rate probably is incorrect. So this is just an example. Your monthly fee includes insurance, studs out, landscaping, snow removal, street maintenance, common areas, maintenance of the common areas, reserve funds, association management fee. So that's all included in your monthly fee, which is substantially less than the market rate buyers. All right, so there's a site plan where all the units are available, and there also is the dates where, you know, unit 1 is available in June, 5, September, 7, July, 16, October, unit 20 in November, so you can look to see where those units are on the site plan to try to figure out what you're interested in. The floor plans are here. You can look at those, and we're going to move and skip to the application. I'm on page 12. So the application, first page is really your contact information, name, address, phone, email address. You let us know if you own a home or ever owned a home when it was sold, if you'll be paying cash for the unit. If you're a local preference, you need to list everyone who will be living in the home, and then give us a breakdown of your income, your gross monthly income from all sources for every household member in the home that is working, or not working but has income. And then you need to break out your total monthly assets, checking, savings, stocks, bonds, retirement, if you're getting a gift, all that needs to be provided. We are not basing your eligibility on any of this information. It gives us a guide to use when we're reviewing your information, because everything you put for income and assets, you are providing the backup documentation to prove it, okay? So this is just giving us an example so we can mess up. Employment status is if you're still working, you need to give us the name of your employer. Anyone in the home still working, name of employer. If you're retired, just write retired, that's fine. About your family, this is where if you are a minority, the section about your family optional, this is where we pull the information when we determine if we've met the 33.4% of minority applicants in the local pool. So this section on the application is what you need to complete. It's optional. You don't need to complete it, but it can, with a local pool, it can work in your favor to complete it if you're not a Dracut resident, okay? Even if you are a Dracut resident, you definitely want to provide it because that will minimize if we have to pull anyone in from the open pool to the local pool. So either way, if you're a minority, it works to your advantage. But again, purely optional. I don't care if you provide that information or not, but it can work to your advantage if you do. Okay, then you need to sign and date the rest of this. Page 14 is an affidavit and disclosure form, and 15, you need to read, sign, and date that. Okay, so now we're getting into the nitty-gritty as far as the documentation you need to provide with your application. I'm going to go over it. I'm going to tell you what you need to provide, why you need to provide it, and how we use it. Okay, so I want you to get off the phone, off this meeting, understanding the process as much as possible. Another question, what if you signed a lease with a friend and you win the lottery? Do you need to leave the apartment lease? If you can afford to pay rent and a mortgage at the same time, you don't have to, but that's up to you. You can't, you're renting, so that's between you and your roommate. If you can afford both, it's not going to be a problem. If you can't afford the lease and the mortgage, then you may have to pass on the unit or pick a later unit. People in the local pool will select their unit locations first. Those in the open pool will select from the remaining units. Okay? All right. So 50%, it's actually more like 60 or 70% of applications that are submitted to MCO Housing Services for a lottery are incomplete and are included in the lottery. So what I have done, I've put this list together of 10 points on page 16 to kind of highlight the areas people make mistakes. And the reason mistakes are made is people do not read. So if you submit an incomplete application and the information is clearly stated, you will get no sympathy from me or any one of us in our office, mainly because I'm currently reviewing applications for a lottery. I reviewed 9 applications out of 18. One is included in the lottery. So out of 9, 1. So, and because they didn't read and their application was incomplete, so I got 0 sympathy. And the things that are missing is very obvious in the application. So no sympathy. So I put this together to highlight where people make their mistakes. It's not making a difference because you need to read the application. So what I recommend people do when they're filling out an application for any lottery is, one, obviously read through it. Start gathering your information. So you sit down, read through it, collect your documents, set it aside. And a couple days later, go through the required list of financial documentation again. I guarantee you, you have missed something. All right? Add it to the packet. Set it aside again. And then look through it a third time. And if you're certain you've got everything, then you can submit it to us, okay? But people sitting in one sitting tend to miss stuff, okay? So you've got plenty of time. We market these units for 60 days, so there's plenty of time to get it right, all right? We are here. You can ask questions. You can call us, email. We will help you. But what we won't do is sit down with you prior to the application deadline and review your application to make sure everything's there. Once you submit your application, there is no changes to the application, and we do not begin reviewing until after the application deadline. So any time up until the application deadline, you can add documentation and you can change information on your application. After the deadline, no changes, no new documentation. We will accept the new documentation, but that would be considered a late application, okay? All right, so in pages 17, 18, and 19 of the application is the list of the required financial documentation, okay? Under certain sections there, I have added notes. The notes give you additional information. You need to read the notes when they're provided. And that can be the difference of a complete and incomplete application, and it can be the difference between an eligible and ineligible applicant, all right? So read the notes. All financial documentation, income, assets, tax returns, are required from all household adults age 18 or older. There is no exception here. So don't call me when I say your application is incomplete because we didn't read any, we didn't get any information from the 20-year-old named John Smith. And you're going to call me and say, well, you know, he doesn't work, he hasn't paid taxes. Well, you can provide us from the IRS verification that they did not file taxes, okay? You didn't provide bank statements. Most everybody at that age has bank statements, okay? So they may not have any income, but you need to show us that there was no income by providing the tax returns or wage and income transcripts that have zero income or a verification that they didn't file taxes. So you need to provide us that documentation. We will not take your word for it. So everyone 18 years of age or older. All asset statements must include your name, account number, and institution name, all right? People, we do not accept the running transaction list for 3 months. We want the actual bank statements or the actual asset statement. Some people will just print out, you know, a running transcript of their account, and all it provides is the account number. It doesn't provide the name of the bank, and it doesn't have your name on it 9 times out of 10. Any statements we get regarding that, we are not going to take into consideration for income or assets. They all need your name, account number, and institution name or whatever the asset is. If it's not listed, it's an automatic incomplete. Do not assume you do not need to provide a certain document. When in doubt, call us. That's what we're here for, to assist you. Anyone in the office can answer your questions. So please call before you submit, or when in doubt, just submit the document anyways. If we don't need it, we will shred it, okay? But I'd rather receive more documentation than we need than you miss the documentation because you didn't think we needed it, all right? Again, when we review your last 3 years of federal income tax returns, you're submitting with them your W-2s or 1099s. So we're going to know if you have a retirement account, 401k, 403b, pension, whatever it's called. That's going to show directly on the W-2s. So you need to provide those statements for your retirement accounts, 401, 403b, 401k, IRAs, pension, retirement, whatever it may be. Don't tell us that you can see the dollar amount on your pay stub. We can, absolutely, how much is deducted every month. But the number on your pay stub is only the year to date. It's not the full value of the account. So you actually need to provide the actual document, the last statement for a 401k or everything else. Bank statements you need for the last 3 months, I'm going to get to that in a minute. But just make sure you need to provide those statements. And don't forget, if you have a Robinhood or Acorn or Bitcoin, or I'm blanking out on some other online bank statements, Allie, you need to provide those statements as well, okay? So sometimes, some people, they won't provide a Robinhood account because they say they have no money in it. Well, zero balance. How do I know that? It could have $500,000 in it for all I know. So that's why you must provide the statements. If you are unable to provide specific information, then note it on the application and explain the circumstances. This will not guarantee you that we will include you in the lottery, but depending on what the circumstance is, but if we can work with you, we will. But if we don't know the problems you've had, we can't even have a thought process on whether we'll include you in the lottery or not. So let us know if you're having problems getting something. If you have a complicated situation and we're not going to understand it on first look through, certainly provide a letter with your application explaining your circumstances. We'll read it, of course. If we have additional questions, we'll call and ask you for clarification. But if it's a tricky situation, just let us know, okay? And we will do our best to work with you. But if you don't provide us that information, I can't tell you how many times, you know, we've denied someone and they said, but this is my problem. I said, yeah, you should have let us know that. We're not mind readers, nor are we. We have so many applications to review. We're not going to chase down that information. So if what you sent us isn't clear to us and you haven't provided a letter explaining your circumstances, we're not going to chase you down and ask for it, okay? So We will have questions in reviewing people's applications. We will email you. We don't like denying or determining someone ineligible. So if you're reviewing your application for eligibility, which means you provided all your documentation, if we have questions, we will ask. If we have questions and want additional documentation that wasn't part of the application, you are not penalized for missing that document, okay? This thing is long enough as it is. There are certain forms and paperwork I may send to you to fill out that wasn't part of the application because there's just too many pages. So that, if I do that, I am not going to penalize you because it wasn't part of the application. So we are as fair can be. But if I do ask you for additional documentation, you need to provide it quick, real quick, particularly prior to the lottery. All right. Do not take, photos with your cell phone and attach them to the body of an email. They're always illegible. When we print them out, they usually print out smaller. So we can't read it, and we're not spending our time printing out those attachments. Anything you email to us must be in a PDF and attached to the email. Do not put anything in the body of the letter because we're not spending a half hour printing it out. And most of the time, it's illegible. All right, you certainly can fax your information. That's fine. We don't recommend it because if all pages aren't received, then that's on you, not on us. And sometimes people who go to a company like Staples, inevitably there's an issue with the fax. So I would caution you on that. All right, so now we're going to get in the actual documents you need to provide. All right, I've got a few more questions. Do you get to choose which month to move in, or is it chosen for you? Usually, again, local pool will select their units first, so they can select first person can select any one of the five. Second person, what's remaining? Third person's what remaining? So it is not chosen for you, but if you're the last person to choose, you get what you take, what's left, okay? My 18-year-old starts school full-time in the fall. Does that count for a lottery that is in May, or is it too late to be considered? I don't understand what that means. If your 18-year-old is starting college in the fall, more than likely, he's still considered a household member because he is going to be coming home during vacations and summers, I assume. So he's still considered a household member. So you would need to provide proof that he's starting school in the fall. If he's been accepted into a college, you need to provide a copy of that information. We need to know if he's a full-time or a part-time student. And my guess is he's working during the summer, pure guesswork here. That income will count in determining income eligibility unless, and I'm getting ahead of myself here, if your 18-year-old is a full-time college student and a dependent on your tax return, then we are only going to count $480 of his income towards the household income eligibility. If he is a part-time student or a full-time student, part-time student, whether he is or is not a dependent on your tax return, it doesn't matter. And a full-time student, if he is not a dependent on your tax return, then all income and assets will count towards income eligibility. So if they're a full-time student and a dependent, we are only going to count $480 of their income towards income eligibility. If they're a full-time or a part-time student, whether they full-time, if they are not a dependent on your tax return, and it doesn't matter if they are or not as a part-time student, we will count their full income and assets to determine eligibility. I hope that answers your question. I wasn't 100% certain I understood your question. Do you also need something like Cash App? Yes. We ask for if you have Venmo, Cash App, PayPal, whatever those online accounts are, you need to provide the last 3 months' statements of those accounts. You need to identify who gave you the money going in, the deposits. We need to know where they're from. If you don't tell us where they're from, and this is part of the application, anything you told us that we don't know where it's from is going to count as income. We're going to average it over the 3 months, and then we're going to multiply it by 12, and we're going to add it to your income. And I cannot tell you how many times people have been determined ineligible for a lottery for that reason, okay? So I'm not there yet in reviewing this. I will mention it again. So we're going to start with a pre-approval. FHA, Quicken, Rocket Loans, not accepted. must be fixed rate. Take the mortgage information directly to your lender so they can put the pre-approval together that is appropriate. If you are paying cash, you need to let us know you are paying cash for the property. You need to provide proof of age, so driver's license, birth certificate, passport needs to be part of your application for everyone 55 years of age or older. If you require reasonable accommodation, you must provide a letter from your doctor at the time of application. A reasonable accommodation will not be taken into consideration if that was not part of your initial application. Local preference, if you meet one of the local preference criteria, you need to provide documentation at the time of application. Excuse me, if you live in Drake, get a copy of your lease. If you own a home in Drake, send me a copy of your tax bill, copy of your driver's license. Not really good because I've driven on out of town driver's license a lot. Current utility bills. If you work for the town or the school system, it should state that on your pay stubs. So you need to prove you're a town resident. All right, pay stubs. If you are working, we need the last 5 consecutive pay stubs. Whether you get paid weekly, semi-weekly, bi-weekly, or monthly, we need the last 5 pay stubs. All right? Don't send me 3 and says it covers 6 weeks. You are correct, it does, but we ask for 5. So 3 pay stubs, incomplete. We look at your pay stubs to determine, project your income forward 12 months. We will project your income 2 ways. The first is we will look at your gross income per paycheck, average it out over the 5, and multiply by the number of pay periods in the year. So if you're paid biweekly, we're going to multiply it by 26. We're going to get that dollar amount. That's one way. The second way is we're going to look at the year-to-date on your latest pay stub. We're going to divide that by the number of weeks in the year, and then we're going to multiply that by 52. Whichever is greater is going to count as your income limit. And then we do look at your previous year's income. If there's a substantial difference between 2024 W-2s and what we're projecting your income being, then, you will need an explanation. But usually we just look at it projected forward, gross pay period and year to date. We determine your income, whichever is greater, will count towards your income eligibility. Now, when we're reviewing your pay stubs, we look up through, your deductions. If you have a retirement account, it's going to show us in your deductions. If you direct deposit, usually it shows us all the banks your money's going in. It'll provide usually not the bank name, but it will provide the last three or four digits of your account number. We will match those up with the bank accounts you provide us. If you have an account going into account ending 1234 and you don't provide us the corresponding bank account, it's an incomplete application. I mention that because some people, put money into an emergency fund, never touch it, forget they even have the account because they don't use it on a weekly, daily, monthly basis. That's why I'm mentioning it. You may forget you have it. We won't, because we've got the pay stubs in front of us. So just peruse over that pay stub to make sure you're including all those bank statements. Now, if you are receiving unemployment, there is a DOR statement, and that tells us how much you're getting when your unemployment ends. And you also need to provide a pay history, which tells us how much you've gotten each week, year to date, or so far. So you need to provide both documents on that if you are receiving unemployment. If you have disability, workers' comp, or severance pay, you received a letter. You're probably getting checks as well. But typically there's a letter that will tell us, for certainly the disability and workers' comp, how much you're getting, gross, when it's ending, if it's going to end. Disability can be short-term or long-term. I get that. Workers' comp, who knows? Doctor's note. So we need to know how much you're getting and as best as we can determine when you'll be going back to work. And I know it's easier for me to say than do it, because if you're on workers' comp, it's up to your doctor when you'll go back. But you should have a sense of when you'll be going back, and it's nothing we'll hold you to. But we would need to know that documentation. Severance pay, there's always an end date to that. So you need to tell us how much you're getting. If it got a lump sum, that's a different story. if you're getting it on a weekly basis or biweekly basis as your regular pay, we need to know when that will end, because we don't want to give you more income than you're going to have through the course of the 12 months. Same with unemployment. If it's going to end in whatever month, we're only going to count, or whatever week, we're only going to count up to that point in time. All right, if you have obtained a new job within the last 12 months, we need a job offer letter from the employer. That letter needs to say when you're slated to start or when you started, your salary, hourly rates, how many pay periods a year, if you get bonuses. It needs to include all that information. I just reviewed an application today that was one sentence. Maureen O'Hagan was hired to work at ABC Company, and her start date is, you know, March 31st. That letter tells me nothing. I need to know how much you're going to earn. You know, we need to know that in order to project your income. So new job in 12 months must provide a copy of an offer letter. If you are no longer working for an employer you worked for in the last 12 months, you need to provide a separation letter from your employer, which includes your end date of employment. And again, 5 pay stubs, whether you were paid weekly, biweekly, or monthly. And it's from, again, pay stubs, all sources of income is from all household members 18 years of age or older. If you have a 16-year-old that's working, we do not count his income, all right? If you're receiving Social Security, annuities, retirement funds, pension, disability, death benefits, or any other type of periodic receipt, you only need to provide the current letter. For example, Social Security, you received a letter probably in December on what your benefit was going to be beginning January 2025. So we need those letters. Now, some people will argue with me and say, well, you'll be able to see those deposits in your bank account. You are correct. We will. But you need to remember your income eligibility is based on gross income. So if you, with your Social Security, Medicare could be taken out, retirement accounts, your taxes may be taken out, and you get the balance for that pay period. So your income is based on gross, not net. That's why we need the backup documentation from all sources of income. All right, if you receive child support or alimony, if you have divorce papers, that your child support and or alimony was determined at the time you were divorced, provide us those. If you're getting your alimony, not alimony, but child support through the DOR, the Department of Revenue, you need to send us the DOR paperwork. It's usually two things. One is a cover page that states the kid's name and the parent, how much is due and how frequently. It lets us know if it was paid on time, this last payment that was due, if you're in arrears, something else I can't forget. So that's the cover page, and then we need the payment history. So, for example, you may be receiving, you know, $200 a month, but we go into the pay history, and you're only receiving $100. We're only going to count $100. We're not going to count the $200, okay? So you need to provide documentation. If you have children and you are not receiving child support, you need to let us know that you're not receiving child support, even if it was awarded. All right. If you are self-employed, you need to provide the last 12 months an income and expense statement. So you need to break out monthly your income per month as self-employed and your expenses per month. If you're working, your income is based on your gross income. If you're self-employed and people have second jobs, that is considered self-employment with 1099s. Your income is based on net. So, for example, if you're working Uber or Lyft, you get a statement every month. Do not send me the statement. Or a weekly statement. I have people that send me 52 weeks of statements. I'm not going through those statements. I'm not. That's not my job. That's your job. So you need to break out. And then there's always expenses with those kind of jobs. You got gas. You got maintenance. Whatever it may be. You need to list them in your income. Your income for that self-employed job will be based on net, okay? If you have filed your 2024 tax return, which if you submit your application after the 15th, you would have, you know, if you had the self-employment last year, it's going to be on your tax return. So we're going to know you're self-employed. So if that's the case, since we're only in April of this year, you know, so then we're going to look at last year's, and then you just need to prepare the spreadsheet for January, February, and March, all right? And we're going to look, we're going to count 9 months from 2024, and then we're going to get the net for 2024 and then multiply it by 9 monthly, and then we're going to average the 3 months, January, February, and March, and then we'll get the average of both and project out 12 months, okay? So you don't have to put the last 12 months together because you should have already done it for your tax returns if you file taxes. You have not provided your tax return because, say, you've already submitted your application and taxes aren't due until the 15th of April, then you would need to have broken it out for 12 months, all right? And we do need, obviously, we're still going to get your income tax returns, but we need 3 months of your business checking, savings, and other financial accounts along with all the other bank accounts you have. All right, if you have filed your 2024 federal income tax return, we do not want your state return. Anyone who sends a state return, it's automatically shredded. We don't keep it. I just shred it. So we only need your federal. So if you have filed your 2024 taxes, we need your 22, 23, and 24 federal income tax return, all right? If you have not filed your 2024 yet, then we need your 21, 22, and 23 federal income tax return. Now, we do look at your return. We're going to know your income, of course. If you have interest or dividends, if you're getting Social Security, if you're getting retirement accounts, if you own a home, if you are self-employed, we're going to get all that from your tax return. So don't try to hide anything from us because it's all going to be right there. Okay, so we do look at your tax return as closely as we look at your pay stubs, and I'll get to it in a moment, your bank statements, okay? Now, if you you need to provide all pages you submitted to the IRS. For example, if you are self-employed and you don't submit, I think it's Schedule 1, and I can see you're self-employed, whether you made money or lost money, you filled out that form, and you didn't provide it, your application's incomplete, okay? So provide every page you submit to the IRS. I don't need worksheets. I just need the actual pages you submitted to the IRS. If you file in any one of those tax years and you do not have copies of your tax return, you can request a tax transcript from the IRS. The fastest way to do that is go on irs.gov, create a username and password, and then print out the tax transcript. Do not provide me the account transcript. We want the tax transcript. There is no charge for that. If you actually wanted to order an actual copy of your tax return, the IRS will charge you for that, which is why we do not require it, okay? But if you misplace the tax return, the fastest way to get it is to get a copy of the transcript, tax transcript, signing up for the irs.gov, create a username and password, and print it out. The slow way to get it is to go to irs.gov, search for and print out Form 4506-T, fill that out, and mail it to the IRS. That's the slow way to do it. It will take 2 to 3 weeks to get that information back to you, okay? If you have not filed taxes in any one of those years, then you need to provide a letter from the IRS verifying you did not file during those tax years. Same way, the fastest way, go to irs.gov, create an account, print out the verification of non-filing letters for the tax years you need it. The slow way, Form 4506-T, you need to fill that out and send it off to the IRS, and they will mail you the letters. I don't know what's happening nowadays, if there's any IRS offices open, or you can call the IRS. There's been, as you know, with the new president, there's been some upheaval in that stuff, so I don't know if there's offices open you can go in to get taxes anymore, but you need to do your legwork on that if you don't have the copies we need. Now, you also need to provide copies of the corresponding W-2s. If you have not filed your 2024 taxes yet, and you're providing us with your 21, 22, 23 W-2 taxes, you also need to provide your 2024 W-2s, okay? The taxes may not be done, but you do have your W-2s and or 1099s. And again, if you can't find any of your old 1099s, you can go to the IRS.gov, create an account, and print out the wage and income transcript. And that will provide all sources of income that you receive for the tax year you're inquiring about. Okay? All right. Assets. Any questions on tax returns? Nope. Okay. I have a question. If my bank statement only lists checking accounts, do I need the savings account statement? Yes. Sometimes the checking and savings accounts are combined in a statement. Sometimes they're not. If they're not, then you need to provide the last 3 months of your checking account statements and the last 3 months of your savings account statements, which we're moving on to that section right now. Again, remember, all asset statements must include your name, account number, and institution name for all checking, savings, investment, retirement accounts. Any accounts provided without this information is not going to work in your favor. All right, so checking account. Last 3 months, every page front and back. If you do not get your checking, your statements in the mail every year, every month, then you can log on to your bank account, create a username and password, and print out the e-statements. Those are exactly what your bank statements look like if they were to mail them to you and send them to me the last 3 months. Now, we look at your checking and savings accounts very closely. We pay particular attention to your deposits. So the note under here says, direct deposits from payroll, Social Security, tax refunds, transfers between accounts, the DOR, DTA, we can identify where those funds came from. But you need to remember, Social Security, it's net. We still need your statement because we base your income on gross, okay? But we're going to see your direct deposit from payroll, but we're also going to have your paycheck so we know what the gross is, not the net. Tax refunds, tax transfers between accounts, we can identify. Usually it says tax refund. Transfers, this came from checking account 1234. So we can identify those. The DOR, the DTAs, the Department of Transitional Assistance. If you're receiving food stamps or you have income from transitional assistance, you need to provide that statement as well. So we're covering any source of income we're going to see in your deposits in your bank statement. So if you have cash deposits, ATM, mobile deposits, counter deposits, that's what I consider cash deposits, payroll or non-payroll, meaning your check is not direct deposited, you have to go to the bank and deposit it yourself, and maybe a mobile deposit or something else, or other income deposits, you have to identify where those funds came from. So again, if you don't have direct deposit, you're depositing your paycheck, you need to write paycheck from ABC company, okay? We're going to have copies of those paychecks, but you need to let us know. That's what we're going to match them up to. If you have Venmo, eBay, Poshmark, PayPal, Cash App, Zelle deposits, or any other transfers between accounts, you need to identify all of them. Failure to do so, and we are going to count all those unidentified deposits as income, when they may not be. We're going to average it over 3 months, and we're going to add it to your income for income eligibility. And I guarantee you, some of you will then be determined ineligible because you did not provide the identification of those deposits. You can write, if you have ATM, mobile deposits, over-the-counter deposits, you can write directly on the bank statement where that money came from. It could be a birthday gift. It could be someone reimbursing you. You took, I don't know, whatever it is. But you need to identify it, because if you don't, we're going to count it as income. Venmo, people get paid on Venmo now. So you need to identify, and with Venmo, eBay, Poshmark, PayPal, Cash App, you need to provide the last three statements. Did I include that in here? Okay. You should provide, because it's not here. You should provide the last 3 months of statements from each one of those accounts, identifying the deposits going into your account. All right. I know people sell on Poshmark. I know people sell on eBay. It's not regular income unless you're doing it as a business. So it probably isn't going to impact your income much, but, or at all, but you need to let us know where this money's coming from. If you're getting transfer from account ending 1234 into your bank account, we don't see account 1234, then your application is incomplete. Whereas account 1234 may be one of your kids' accounts and they're sending you their monthly mobile phone payment. But if you don't tell us that, we don't know. We're probably the easiest people to get along with as far as determining people's eligibility, but you've got to let us know the details we need to know, okay? And again, I can't stress enough, if you fail to explain where all these unidentifiable deposits are coming from, Venmo is an unidentifiable deposit. Cash App is an unidentifiable deposit. If you don't explain it, it's going to count as income, and this is the biggest area people get into trouble with. So just take the time, write legibly, please, or print legibly, write on the bank statement where those funds are coming from. People can figure out how to do it on PDF. I don't know how to do that. People will do that, but you need or type up a separate sheet explaining each deposit. However it works for you, that's okay. Just identify it. And we do that for both your checking account and your savings account. All right? Now, as far as how you spend your money, I don't care. All right? I don't look at how you spend the money. I will go through your transaction list. What I'm looking for is Robinhood, Acorn, Fidelity, Vanguard, an account where money's going out of your account and you're depositing it into another account. That's telling me you should have provided a copy of a Robinhood statement or an Acorn account or a Fidelity account. So that's all I'm looking for when we go through the transactions. I don't look at how you spend your money. I don't. Nor do I have the time to do that. So I'm really just going through and looking for those accounts. Okay? And we do that for both the checking and the savings. Depositing money between accounts, not a big deal. Zelle deposit, tell us what account it's coming from. We'll look it up when we get to reviewing that account. All right. Any questions on how we look at checking, savings, accounts, anything like that? Do you need a checking account statement of a household member 18 plus who has, yes. We need copies of everything you're providing for yourself, even if it has a zero balance or a penny balance. We need the same documents for every household member 18 years of age or older. So the answer to that question is yes. Good questions, by the way. Okay, if you have a debit card, this is not your ATM card that's attached to your bank account or your debit card attached to your bank account. This is if you get Social Security on a Direct Express. Some people get paid on a Visa prepaid card or anything like that. You need just to provide us just the last statement. Okay, we don't need the last 3 months. We need the last statement, and we will look to make sure that's the only money that's being deposited on that account. And if there's a balance, that balance counts towards your asset limit, so you do need to provide that information. All right, moving along. If you have a revocable trust, you need to provide us with a copy of the trust, the money, house, car, not car, but money, house, whatever's in that trust counts towards your asset limit. Investment accounts, stocks, bonds, treasuries, CDs, mutual funds, money market, Robinhood, all online accounts. We only need the last statement. We don't need the last three, just the last month's statement. And I understand if there isn't a lot of activity in a savings account or some other account, they may send you an account quarterly. Retirement accounts can be quarterly. That's okay. You just send us the last statement that you have available to you, okay, and that's fine. Retirement accounts, IRA, Roth, 401k, 403b, pension, retirement, wherever your retirement money is, we only need the last statement. Now, if you work for, say, the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, I know you don't have access to that money while you are still working for them, or for a town, you don't. You still need to provide the statement. And for those statements, you usually have to contact HR in town or the state, and they will prepare a letter for you. Rarely do I see a statement. That's not true. From the state, rarely do I see a statement. It's usually a letter, and they say you have X number of dollars in the account. You have no access to the account while you're still employed. If you're no longer employed and you haven't started taking it, again, we need to know because you can easily cash out that account if you want. So we need to know that as well. If you have a whole life or universal life insurance policy, both those policies have a cash value attached to them. The cash value is part of your assets, will be counted towards your assets. So you need to provide the cash value of those accounts. This is not a life insurance account you may have with your company, because if you no longer work for the company, that plan goes away. So these are retirement accounts that you purchase on your own outside of work. If you have a term life insurance policy, there is no cash value to that account, so it does not count towards your asset limit. Student status, I've already spoken about it, but I will talk about it again. If your student's 18 years of age or older, full-time student, and is dependent on your tax return, and they're working, we are only going to count $480 of their income towards household income eligibility. If they are a full-time student and are not a dependent on your tax return, or part-time student, the full money they earn will count towards income eligibility and asset eligibility. All right. If you are pregnant, the unborn child is considered part of the household member, so you need to provide a letter from the doctor telling us that you're pregnant when the baby's due. Again, I've already spoken, if you're in the process of a divorce or separation, you need to be far enough along in the process that we can get a legal document from your attorney that states the breakdown of marital assets. If you're going to get child support, if you're going to get alimony, how the house is being split, your other assets are being split. If it's too soon for that and you're not that far in the process or you haven't come to an agreement yet, then your soon-to-be ex-spouse or partner needs to provide their income, their assets, if they own a home, all will be taken under consideration in determining eligibility, even if that individual will not be moving into the property with you. Okay, you can thank people who lied for tightening up the procedure we need to do for that. Again, we've discussed this. If you are receiving a gift for a down payment and or closing costs, they need to provide a letter stating the dollar amount. If they provide a range, we're going to count the highest number towards your income limit. All gifts do count towards, not the income limit, excuse me, the asset limit. All applications will be checked for down payment at the time of application. We must see proof of those assets to be included in the lottery. Keeping in mind the gift, the letter is proof. We don't need to see that money in your account. If we do not see the funds, you won't be included in the lottery. If you have money at home and you're planning on using that money for a down payment, you need to deposit it in a bank account. We are not going to take your word for it. All right? So you need to deposit it. You can take it out after you've been determined eligible and put it back under your mattress if you want, but it needs to be deposited in your account to be taken under consideration. If you have a home to sell, you need to provide us with a copy of a market analysis that tells us what your broker thinks your home can, what you plan on listing your home for. You need to provide a copy of the last mortgage statement or home equity loan, whatever you owe on the house. If your home is paid off, provide a letter stating there is no mortgage on your current home. And we will get a guesstimate of the home equity that you'll get when you sell your property. That on the closing statement will say cash to seller. That's your equity. That's what we'll use in determining your asset eligibility for the project. We'll determine that guesstimate and then add the other assets you may have to that number, and it cannot exceed $275,000. I did not put my dependent on the tax return, but I could have. Does that cause a problem with counting your income? A, if you didn't put the dependent on the tax return, absolutely. Her income, 100% that she earned, will count towards your household income eligibility because she's not on your tax return. All right, so when you submit your application, you need to provide the completed application, proof of age, the signed and dated affidavit and disclosure form, and the TIP, signed and dated application TIP form information sheet, the complete signed and dated required personal information and income verification document forms, all required financial and other documentation for all members 18 or older. If you require special accommodation, that information is needed, a mortgage pre-approval, or a note saying you're paying cash, and proof of local preference. And that has to be in our office if you're emailing it by April 28th. If you are mailing it, the application needs to be postmarked on it before the application deadline, and then we need to receive it within 2 weeks. If it's postmarked April 28th, then we need to receive it on or before May 12th. If we get it May 13th, you won't be included in the lottery. Okay, so we give you the 2 weeks because we know the post office is very slow. I have gone in and spoken with the post office. They suggest if you're going to mail it, you mail it priority mail or certified mail where you have a tracking number that you can track the package. Okay, if you mail it regular mail, which you certainly can, there's no way to track that package, and mail has gotten lost. We've had people, I mailed it this date, and we still don't have it. It never came. It's lost somewhere. So that they recommend, the post office does, because their efficiencies are so good, they recommend that you send it priority with or certified with a tracking number. And I know it's more expensive, but you're more than welcome to drop it off in our office. We're here 9 to 5 every day. This is in Drake. We're just in Ayer, so it's not that far. I'm sorry, we're in Harvard. It's not that far away, so you're certainly more than welcome to drop it off at our office if you want to be sure we get it or email it. All right, that's it. Any questions? So this meeting will be posted on our website probably tomorrow or Wednesday. So if you want to re-listen to this, you can. Or people who weren't able to make the meeting, hopefully they'll listen. I hope that you found it helpful. I'm telling you, call us before you submit your information. We are more than happy to speak with you and answer any questions you have. That's what we're here for. So please take advantage of that. So otherwise, I'm going to say good night to everybody. Thank you for sharing a couple hours with me. I appreciate it. Good night. Thank you, everybody.